All right. Welcome to another edition of the Presidio Bitcoin Jam.
The Presidio Bitcoin Jam, which looks a bit more like the Nostr News setup.
It does look surprisingly like the old Nostr News, right? So when I was telling Haley in the lunchroom, when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yeah. So Steve is out this week. And so
he couldn't make it.
In his absence, we'll be talking about a lot of stuff Bitcoin. We'll be talking a lot of stuff Nostr. For those of you who don't know, DK and I used to do a show called Nostr News. We actually did one recently, weeks ago from here. And so in honor of that, I also wore my Nostr shirt today.
Yeah.
So if you can't see that.
That's the NoFX logo.
That is the NoFX logo. Shout out
Reinvented
to Lightning
Store. Nostr.
That's right. Lightning.store. If anyone wants to use the Lightning Network for cool payments, you can get shirts like this one on Lightning.store. And it's awesome.
Yeah. Not sponsored.
Definitely not sponsored. Just a big fan.
So I think I don't have anything smart to say about the tariffs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do.
We didn't even mention the tariffs. But yeah, I guess it's, we have to at least,
just acknowledge. Yeah, acknowledge.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of like what we said last week, I don't also have any new particularly crazy insights other than to say a couple things. Number one, I am still pleasantly surprised, I guess, at how well Bitcoin has held up. Relatively speaking, I think we're around the same, area we were last week. Obviously, it's interesting that gold is spiking so much today. And, I'm not like a macro expert ever, but like my understanding is generally Bitcoin follows gold, but sometimes it lags by a few months. It'll be interesting to see how that interplay plays out. And then I think just kind of what I was mentioning last week as well, though, like I do think that in general, there's more than meets the eye here. I mean, who knows, politically speaking, if this is checkers or 5D chess or whatever, I honestly don't know. But it does seem like, increasingly, I do think that whether it's the administration or people around Trump believing that AI takeoff is imminent, I think that's still very possibly in play. And what we talked about last time, and I think, Naval had a tweet where he was basically like, anyone that can't produce their own drones is going to be a vassal state. And, that was one of the possibilities we mentioned last week as well, is that, I hope this is not, sort of a harbinger of a hot war. But I do think that's going to come heavily into play as well, is like, you need to be able to manufacture your own defense. So nothing else really new to add to me there other than I think, Bitcoin's holding up better than I expected and we'll see where it goes.
And you had said something about a gold versus Bitcoin thing just before we sat down. What were you saying about how gold was, there was some commentary made maybe in the last week or so?
Oh, I mean, I just think it's just interesting that, gold's like at an all-time high this morning and Bitcoin is not yet. Historically, Bitcoin is, sort of lagged gold, generally in months is my understanding. So it's interesting to me that Bitcoin has been a little bit more stable, but has not yet sort of like popped off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like we said last week, as global uncertainty rises, people want neutral store value assets. Gold so far is, what people know. I do think one thing we didn't mention last week, was right after we got off of our show, Bessem came on and basically they asked him about gold, some news media interview or whatever. And he mentioned Bitcoin unprompted. And he was like, well, there's many things that are emerging as, neutral store values, Bitcoin, gold. And he said Bitcoin first, which I thought was pretty telling. So,
and he's not made any comments before about Bitcoin or?
I think he has. I'm not sure. But it was just interesting to me that in an interview question that was specifically about gold as a store value, Bitcoin's what he said.
He kind of volunteered it.
He volunteered it, yeah. So that was interesting.
Cool.
But yeah.
All right. Well, that concludes the macro portion of the show.
If you guys want macro, probably listen to Lynn Alden.
Yeah. Like I said, there's better people than us to weigh in on that. But I think our title, we had vibe coding on again because vibe coding, I personally just can't get enough. Like I've been using so many different tools and I just feel like a kid in a candy store. Just there's always new stuff to play with. Every few days, there's a new tool drops and it lets you do something that you just blows your mind. You didn't know how easy it could be.
Totally.
So we talked about I mentioned the Nostr message signer thing that I completed last week. And then I think I've got a bunch of other projects that I was working on this week.
Yep.
That I can tell you about. But I think you had some thoughts on, did you want to talk about the bounties that you proposed or did you want to talk other stuff?
Oh, man. Well, we have a lot to talk coding. About. So, yeah. You know, while I can't endorse this as the greatest macro thinkers in Bitcoin, I can say DK may be the greatest vibe coder in Bitcoin right now. There's not a lot of vibe coders, but this man's
maybe in the
one.
Vibe coder Noster overlap, yeah, the exactly. intersection, the N of one.
It's a small group.
I'm the best and the worst.
But I think it's going to grow. No, I think the first thing I wanted to say about this was I had a bit of a eureka. They got some traction on Noster this week. And, you know, I forget the account, but I saw an account on Twitter where, okay, so to take a step back, you know, vibe coding, for those of you who haven't heard us talk about on the show, it's increasingly easy to use natural language, i.e. I just like ask for what I want in English and, you know, the computer can generally one-shot some kind of an interesting prototype. Now, to be clear, it's a lot more complex than that. There's a lot of little things in the weeds. Oh, this isn't connecting correctly. And so that was my experience this week, is realizing we're really, you know, close to something amazing, but we're still not there for normies to be able to like one-shot everything. However, you can see where this thing is going. The models are going to keep getting better. The tooling around is going to keep getting better. And you can start to imagine, oh my God, what if everyone in the world can create software? And this is what DK has been talking about for years, which is, are we going to have a world with disposable software where everyone makes exactly what they want? You can, you know, remix all these pieces together and it sounds awesome. Now, I saw a tweet from someone who seems pretty sharp. And they were taking a bit of a bear case on this thesis. And what's interesting is they basically said, look, I don't see a world where everyone's vibe coding their own apps, because an app is only really useful if you have access to data.
Okay. Right?
And so if you vibe code an app for yourself, okay, fine, that'll work. But like most of the apps that we use today, or most of the, you know, websites or whatever, it's interesting because of interaction with other sites, other apps, more importantly, other people. And his kind of point, or whoever this was, it was an Anon, his, her, whatever. Their point was basically, because the interesting data that you will want for those apps is mostly siloed, i.e. it's behind X and you have to depend on X's API, or it's behind, you know, Facebook or whatever. His point was like the apps that people make in general are not going to be that useful because the data is too siloed. And I read that and I was like, if only there was a global permissionless right. identity system and data commons right. on which we could build these apps, I wonder what that would do. And so basically, I started playing with some of the vibe coding stuff myself, and I went to Noster and I made a post, and I was basically like, and I actually believe this, I think vibe coding could be the catalyst for Noster adoption. And the reason for that is, you know, you have this global data commons, or a shared backend, essentially, that makes it so much easier for people to build apps that automatically just bring in the social graph with you, bring in data from all of the other Noster apps with you. This is the sort of Noster, you know, super network effects that we've been talking about ever since we had that jam with Pablo, and he used the word super network effects years ago in Costa Rica. I think that's what this is going to be. Anyways, and you know, that post got a lot of traction. Jack Dorsey, you know, retweeted and said he agrees on that.
Renoted.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever this is. And I think that's maybe why he's focused on Goose and some of the stuff they're working on with open source agents at Block, which I still haven't really played with enough. But my point in all of this is, global identity and global data commons is going to be a really important piece of making apps useful.
Yep.
And I think that's what NOS provides. I don't see anything else providing yet.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think the situation is so dire for like the data moats that existing services have. I think the data moats will help existing services extend themselves even further and be kind of more important in our lives. But I also think like the pace of new data creation is just
wild.
It's wild. It's still going so fast. So it's not. It's like, yes, you know, like I'll have my, you know, my email that I wrote, you know, 10 years ago is stuck in Gmail, but there's new messages that I write on messaging platforms. And I actually do a lot more messaging than email these days.
Yeah.
And those are all on new platforms. They're owned by a bunch of different, you know, centralized providers. Maybe someday we'll have more decentralized messaging. But I don't think the situation is like super, like I wouldn't be pessimistic about the fact that there is a lot of controlled data, because the rate of creation of new data is just so fast.
Yeah.
It gives lots of opportunity for like an open data commons. Also, I think on the idea of disposable software, we came up with one that actually had a data moat implication yesterday. I spend a lot of time in the mountains with my wife, and her brother and his wife also spend a lot of time in the mountains, different spot. we're always like poking fun at each other, being like, "Oh, you don't spend enough time in San Francisco. We wish she saw you more," right? Like, "Oh, I'm always in San Francisco for work." Well, okay, let's compare. So I was like, "Well, what if we could import? We basically all take photos every day. What if we just like import all of your photos?
Cool.
And look at all the EXIF data. You know, the little location, the
metadata
on it. Yeah, the metadata. And like just do a thing that computes and shows you how many days you spent in each location." Mm-hmm. And so I vibe coded it on the way in the car, like, you know, I spent like an hour.
And you were just on the phone?
I had my laptop.
Okay.
Yeah, tethered. I was in the passenger seat.
Okay.
Yeah, vibe coded it, got it mostly working. Ultimately found that the Google API doesn't support location data. Mm-hmm. So you can pull in all the photos, but you can't see location.
Interesting.
But then I very quickly turned what was intended to be a web app on Google Photos to be a native iOS app using the photos that it can access from the camera roll. And I built the app. It was done by last night. So there are data modes of like these photos. What I need is historical data of my photos. But if I just need to answer a question, I can actually spin the thing up. And today it takes me a few hours.
Right.
But like, you know, maybe a year from now, anybody could do that.
Yep.
Without like, there's a lot of, you know, mucking around that you need to deal with to get
there's
it working.
Definitely mucking right now.
yeah, there's a lot of mucking. But actually, I was just talking to a friend of mine. You know, very senior. I think he was at Google 20 years ago. Very senior engineer. He founded a company worth $1 billion, and he's like, he's legit startup, big tech kind of guy.
Casual unicorn. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's like. And I was just talking to him on the way over here. I was like, "Hey, like, you know, have you played with vibe coding? It's so fun." He's like, "No, I haven't really gotten into it." He's like, "What is the deal? Is this like for? Is this making engineers better? Is this making like noobs able to do something?"
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, it's both. but I think like the perfect is like if you're already good at kind of coding and building software the traditional way, you can probably 10 to 100x your productivity or output. And then you just, if you're noob to it, you need to scope down what you're thinking about.
Right.
Because if you just throw some wild prompt like, "Hey, build me an Uber clone," like it's going to fail.
Right.
It's not going to be good at that. But if you're like, "Hey, take all of my photos off my camera roll and show me, you know, count how many pictures have a dog in them."
Yep.
You can probably do that kind of one shot. Right. And so I think the best thing to do if you're starting out is start with something very, very small.
Yep.
That's like very easy to understand kind of what it is. There's not a lot of like open questions about what it should do.
Mm-hmm.
But just try to get comfortable with one thing first. Just very simple scope. Doesn't mean you can't have a bigger ambition. But I think if you start with a super big, wild ambition, you know, explain something in a single prompt, it doesn't work. It gets very confused. And then you're like, "Oh, this vibe coding stuff, it doesn't work at all."
Yeah.
It's actually not the case. It's actually a fantastic tool. But you have to know, like, am I already an expert practitioner who's expecting to 100x my productivity? Or am I like a noob expecting to get something done?
Right.
It empowers everybody.
So this is a really good point, and it triggers a lot of ideas that I had this week, because I did come in at this more of a noob. I used to be able to build some simple stuff like in Python, but it's been mm-hmm. a while. Actually, you know, what's funny is I was walking on the street and I saw the homie Vibe God. Shout out Vibe God. I'm not going to dox him, but
the Vibe God?
Yeah, the Vibe God.
I mean, there's somebody who's really known as being good. Oh, Vibe God.
God, yeah.
The one who coined it.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And he's been getting super into vibe coding, which obviously makes sense given that he is the god of vibes. Yeah. And like, it was really like, I had him send me, you know, what he's built so far. And it was very impressive because he was sort of non-technical, non-engineer. And
we're talking about somebody else then.
Yeah. Yeah. But he got a lot of stuff working, but there was still a lot of like sort of kinks to work out. Right. So he was using PyNoster and building stuff mostly in Python, which is great because that's the language I'm most familiar with. So I was able to see some of the components, but there's still like a ton to your point of like, you know, you can't just like one shot stuff. Like I tried to do this week and it like, you know, you can kind of see where it's going, but like there's like a lot of stuff that just doesn't connect. Like, okay, it's not connecting to the relays correctly, or like, all right, you know, I don't know, like I want to be able to like integrate with Insect Bunker, like all these different things. And it takes some tinkering, right?
Yeah.
But that sparked in me when I saw him doing this. It was just like, he's the perfect person for like our hackathon. We're doing a hackathon in about a month. We'll hopefully be able to reveal information on that very soon. But you know, someone like that that had good ideas is in and around tech. So he's at least used to some like product management kind of stuff as well. Like he can think about like, okay, there's like different chunks of this, but now he can actually just build his app. And it was really cool.
I'm still trying to figure out. I'm like, is this Rick Rubin or
Rick Rubin?
Vibe God.
Rick Rubin wishes he was Vibe God. It's VIBGAWD. He might even be in the chat right now. What up, Steve?
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. Way to hold down the fort.
We got some love from Vibe Steve.
Right.
Anyways, so that got me inspired. But when I started trying to vibe code myself, I would say my experience with it was like a rush of excitement and then a trough of despair. And which is okay, because that's kind of where we are. Like I was like, oh man, I can one shot this thing and it almost works. And then I found all the little pieces that didn't work. And it got me thinking, I see there's like three things that I really want right now that I think would change the whole industry, particularly for Nostr.
Wait, I want to get to those three things.
Yeah, please.
But first, you had a birthday.
Oh, yeah.
I did. On Saturday. Mm-hmm. And at the show last week.
Thanks
on Friday. You already doxed yourself, so I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah.
So last Friday, you said, oh, that'd be awesome if you could, make a video of that. So I did make a video and I posted, I tagged you, but you're so far offline.
I know.
That even when I tag you, you thought I didn't. And I wished you happy birthday in the note.
I'm really sad because I actually was going to come in here. My plan was I was going to give DK a hard time. Right. I was going to be like, DK, where the fuck is my video? You promised you were going to make me a video for my birthday showing me how to vibe code with Nostr.
I did it that night.
And you did it that night. And I know, as an interesting topic, I sometimes feel a little bit like Kevin Kelly on this, where I love technology. I'm deep in it. But I also, it's kind of like a love-hate relationship with technology. I go back and forth. So I'll definitely try and take like days completely off the screen, which is great. I feel like that's like a time when I can like finally unplug and like understand.
Well, you don't even open your phone
for that day, you know, maybe like I'll still like maybe check some things on my phone, like if my dad's texting me or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I even have like apps set up where there's like, it's very challenging to reach me. Like only a few people have like the ability to reach me in this app, right. And I'll go and check the other app later. Very, very little. And, anyway, so that's its own sort of, interesting conversation. I had a long conversation about that with, Tony Giorgio on my podcast Ideas from the Edge about a year ago. So if you want to Google that, it's pretty good. But I didn't see your post or your video. So now I have to go watch your video and I'm super sad about that. And I apologize.
What I was going to say though is like you're trying to take on these very ambitious projects. You're like, oh, I want to do this Nostr thing and use NSEC Bunker and all that. And like, I think that's like, that's the dream that gets you started.
Right.
Right. But I think to make it work, watch the video because like, I would say, if you look at the website that I ended up with, it's functional, but it's not like impressive as a Nostr app. There's many better apps than
that. And
tell
us what you built, because I don't know.
It was just a Nostr signer. So you could basically, I just deployed it to the web where you can generate a new identity. Just click like generate, and it gives you an npub. It doesn't even tell you what the nsec is. It's kind of a throwaway.
That's good.
and then you type a message. Yep. There's a form box. You type a message. Then you click publish. And it publishes it out. And then I went over to like iris.2, you know, the Iris client.
Yeah.
And I just copied that npub and searched for it. And I found that account and I found that message.
That's sick.
So
it worked.
But my point is, think about how small that is.
Yeah.
Like you'd say like, oh, that's why would you bother with it? Well, the reason I bother with it is because I want to make sure I get something very small and contained working, because there were problems getting even that working.
Such as like how long did that take? What problems did you run into? What did you actually have to like debug?
I probably messed with it for like, I guess that was like an hour.
Okay.
And
to be clear, DK is not like a total noob either. So if you're a total noob, I'm assuming even more than that.
Yeah. Though I made that video for you and I published it. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I linked it on Nostr. So you can...
I'll retweet it after this, repost it.
You can see everything about, like I walk you through basically all the prompts I did and all the places sort of where it went wrong, where it got confused and what I did to change it. I think the whole video is 25 minutes, but I'm just reviewing what I had already done separately on my own.
Yeah.
But like the biggest challenge that I was running into is, think about it, like in Nostr, you have to like connect to the relays and presumably that's using WebSocket and you can kind of tell it to connect to the relays and it might stub out a UI that looks like it's connecting to relays, but it's actually not. It's just a stubbed UI. So you have to kind of like push it to make sure that it's actually connecting to relays. And so give me like the ping times or show me like some indication that it's actually connected or how it's connected or something that would be variable per connection so that you can get, you know, more confidence in it. And then one of the big things that I think I mentioned last week, but maybe it wasn't obvious, but I think right after you create initial identity, I think you have to broadcast out that that identity exists before you start publishing messages on behalf of that identity.
Oh, I didn't realize that, yeah.
Probably some protocol detail. I'm sure it's like written somewhere that that's supposed to happen. I was like trying it again and again without that. And then I was like, actually, maybe this needs to be more explicitly published out to relays that I exist before I start saying things.
Right.
So I told it to do that. And then after that, it worked. But you can see how basic that is. Like,
yeah.
NSEC Bunker, great. Like, it doesn't sound like a super complex tool, but compared to what I just explained, I was running into problems with.
Totally.
It is, you know, it is, it's more advanced. So I think it's like, you learn to ride a bike, work, you know, work on it with your training wheels, you know, go slow, like, figure out what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then once you build confidence about, oh, I can generate an identity, I can publish it out, I can connect to relays, I can type a message and sign the message, and the message gets published out to relays.
Right.
And then I can view it from a third-party client.
Yep.
It wasn't me. Okay, that's a very, very focused, contained, I'd say that's the scope of any vibe coding project I would recommend today. Try to scope it down to that,
first
that
project.
Degree of detail.
And what did you use? Was this in Cursor or Lovable? Or
that one, I used Cursor, and I was using, actually, I got it working with, I think I was using Claude Sonnet 3.7 mm-hmm. as the LLM, and I deployed it, I actually ended up deploying it to Vercel by way of GitHub. So it actually,
got it.
I actually didn't know how it was going to do all the Git integration, but it actually like walks you through exactly how it suggests to do it, and then it pushes it to Vercel. And you kind of have to, I mentioned last week, I logged into my own GitHub, I created a new Vercel account.
Yeah.
And it all worked very easily, and like the LLM actually will coach you through all the steps you need to get it out on the web.
What about like, did you buy a domain and like have to do like the DNS records and stuff like that, or when you wanted to host it, or does Vercel do all that for you?
I didn't do that. I think it's like cursor-noster-message.vercel.app or something.
Got it. So yeah, that's next step.
Yeah, that would be easy to do, but that wasn't, I have like extreme confidence that I can achieve that. I'm more like trying to run into the problems that I don't know that I can do, or sort of, I don't know how I would do, I've never done before. You know, and sort of in this hacking mentality, you just like try something, try to get it working. And maybe like once you solve the hard parts of it, then you kind of move on to something else that's hard instead of like actually productize it.
Yeah.
You know, sort of.
A proper hacker.
I mean, unless you build something, you're like, oh, this is actually really awesome. And a lot of people
right.
have been asking me if they could try it. Then maybe I'll actually productize it.
Yeah.
You know, push it to like a real production environment with a custom URL and stuff.
Yeah.
But for now, that wasn't important.
So the first thing that I wanted to say that I want, this is perfect because you've already done this. And I'm going to watch that video. I'm going to repost that video. And I'm really excited for that.
Yeah.
But I think that's, while an amazing start, you know, I was telling DK, and I'll say to anyone out there that is vibe coding with Noster, you know, maybe we have a Carnage,
mm-hmm.
maybe we have
yeah.
Pablo.
Carnage is doing some stuff.
Who's doing vibe lining, I believe, which mm-hmm. is its own interesting, apparently like one-shot cell phone line type stuff. But I think the single highest leverage thing anyone could do right now, including you, actually probably you, because you are probably the single best Noster explainer in the world. Mm-hmm. I would say that, like, I believe that.
Oh, thank you.
Is basically just like live code or live stream, like Twitch, everything you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What I want is, you know, I, let's say intuitively, I think I have a lot of ideas, but like, you know, I did Justin Moon's Biddle Bootcamp back in the day where we mm-hmm. learned Python, all this stuff. And like, I was definitely this little kid in the class. I did get it working though, but like, I really needed like, okay, like, I think part of it is I like definitely lack patience. I just get frustrated. I'm like, fuck this, I'll be back.
Right.
A lot of people do. But what I would love to see is just kind of like a series of videos, like Zero to Hero. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get your point. And now we started with that first video of like, here's the very basic thing. Can we build up over a few videos to something more right. complex? And can I just literally like, if I literally follow, like, explain it like I'm five, I'm a yeah. child, can I follow line by line and get my more complex app working at the end of the series? So I'm issuing this call not only to DK, uh-huh. but to anyone out there that is vibe coding with Noster. Like, I truly believe it's the single highest leverage thing anyone could do because there's so much demand. I know I'm just one person,
yeah.
but from people that want to build Noster apps and just, yeah.
Yeah, so I 100% agree that it's a huge lever for, like, it's a huge lever for Noster to have more people building more diverse, maybe disposable, but diverse types of apps. Like, yeah. we have really tons of energy poured into building great social media clients, but we have almost no energy poured into
anything else.
And so I think once you sort of empower people with simpler tools and workflows to just do whatever they want, you know, make up some little app that doesn't seem super serious, but like it's actually cool. You like it for some reason.
Yeah.
I think that is a huge accelerant to like the kind of data commons and the collective. I'm a big fan of that. Couple things. I think the most important thing to do to get vibe coding started is really like what I mentioned is focus on scoping something down.
Yep.
It's like scope it to something that's achievable.
Right.
Because if you go too big, you're going to get frustrated and give up.
Which is what happened to me this week.
Yeah. And now the live streaming is actually, it's a funny thing because in vibe coding, what you're really doing is you're acting kind of like the senior engineer or the product manager. Mm-hmm. And you're like dispatching kind of ideas to like your junior engineer.
Yep.
Right. And then they're kind of doing the hard work.
Right.
But like what you really do then when you like, once you dispatch that, then it actually takes time.
Right.
And so maybe go away and, you know, hop on email or messaging or catch up on something else. And then you come back to Windsurf. So it's a lot of like switch out, switch back.
Right.
And then run a test. And then there's a problem. I screenshot the error that I get. Like,
got it.
So I was working on some iOS apps, vibe coding. So I'm vibe coding in Windsurf now. I've started with Windsurf about a week ago. And I start vibe coding in that. Then it's modifying the things in Xcode. Xcode, you know, used to run like Mac OS or iOS apps to compile and run them. And then I run it. And then if it has like a build problem, instead of copying and pasting or something, I just like take screenshots and paste the screenshot into Windsurf chat.
Ooh.
As if I'm interacting with like a junior engineer being like, hey, this thing doesn't compile, go fix it.
I love it.
So it's those kinds of things that you really want to focus on, like what are the types of things you might do to make your vibe coding work well. And I think it's like mostly scoping. And then don't be afraid to really like scope it down very narrow. And then don't be afraid to like ask questions like, wait, are you sure you've got that right? Is this real data? Is this test data stubbed out? Or is this, you know, real data? And like, let's look at it a different way. Or I'd like you to like rewind, you know, erase everything we've done and just take what the result is, or try refactoring this a little bit to simplify. Take a few minutes to refactor this, right?
Right.
And it'll do that. And it'll come up with better results when you do it. It sounds crazy. Why would it come up with better results? It actually does.
Yeah.
If you really treat it like a junior engineer,
yeah,
it's very effective. But it means like a live stream might be a bit of hurry up and wait.
Interesting.
Because you're like, oh, do a thing. And then you go off and you're like messaging or.
You know. So I think you would still be surprised. I think a lot of people, even with the waits, would tune in. But maybe then the answer is not live stream. But yeah, like just record all of it. And then I don't know if there's like a tool now, just like cut out all the dead weight.
Yeah. If only somebody would vibe code the video editor, AI video editor. I actually want that. I tried doing it with an older tool and it didn't work, but I'm sure I could do it.
But I think my point is like, even if there's some like dead weight or whatever, like just hearing you talk about this, like I think this is a case of you're a fish in water. You don't even realize how many good ideas and expertise you have. Just like everything you just said, that was like extremely insight dense. Like, okay, treat it like an engineer, ask it to refactor. Like I would not have thought like, okay, like, hey, just refactor this into the screenshot. That's awesome. So I would say, I don't know, even if you think it's like not good or too complex or whatever, like just post everything. Cause I think there's so many people like I would watch whatever you're doing and I can like just scurry ahead through the stuff that's
right.
Dead weight.
Yeah. Yeah. If you would vibe code the AI video editor to make it concise.
Don't look at me. Although we'll talk about my next idea.
We could even collab on it and figure out how to do it. But I do think there's also like the, all the API keys that you end up using and pasting in the environment. Actually, like Windsurf won't even touch a lot of the environment keys. So you have to either generate it themselves or you can ask it to generate it. And then you have to like go into like, if you're using Google Auth, you have to go into the Google Developer Console, grab an API key and put it into an environment. It kind of doesn't want to touch it. Those kinds of things get sort of sensitive.
Here's my next thing. And by the way, you know, this is also a call anyone out there listening. You know, DK is amazing at this stuff, but like other people that want to make these like tutorials, like it would really, really help Nostr.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm telling you, single most important thing. But then this gets me to my next question, which is what I think is a huge opportunity, which is the environment for vibe coding, but specifically focus on Nostr and Bitcoin Lightning payments. And we obviously haven't even talked about Bitcoin Lightning payments, but now stuff like Nostr Wallet Connect,
yep,
that should be in theory a lot easier to connect as well. So one thing, you know, you mentioned secret management, right? Like that mm-hmm. obviously is a giant pain in the ass. And yep. I think that this is where, you know, there's, I don't know if it's a company exactly, maybe it's a company, it's a platform opportunity for someone to come in there and just say, hey, you know, we've got the models in the background, but we handle everything for you. Now, to my sort of understanding.
The everything being what parts of the everything?
Everything to go from I have an idea to this is a functional web app. So that would be things like secret management. That would be things like hosting, like even potentially buying the domain name using something like Sherlock, which mm-hmm. Jordy shipped. An agent can go and buy a domain yep. for you, like everything. And but in my mind, focused on open protocol. So focus on Nostr, Bitcoin, Lightning. And when I look at this, I think it was Carpathy, you know, we talked about this last week or 2 weeks ago, I forgot when, but he was like, yeah, vibe coding is dope, but there's still, even he, who's like clearly an expert, is like, I think he even coined the term, right? Is frustrated.
That's why I thought you meant the vibe god.
No, no. He's a vibe god, G-O-D. I'm talking about vibe god, G-A-W-D. If he's listening out there, then he'll pop in the chat. If not, maybe he'll hear this later. He told me, by the way, that he's a regular listener. He's a sub for our pod.
So oh, good.
I was flattered.
Okay.
Shout out Vibe God. But the point is he was basically just kind of like, man, like this is really cool, but it's such a pain in the ass to deal with secret management. Like, and you might, you know, the database to spin up correctly, all this stuff. And Amjad from Replit popped up in the chat and was like, hey, Replit will do. And then he basically said almost everything you asked yeah. for. Interestingly, the one thing that I think there's two things he couldn't do. One of them was payments. Mm-hmm. Wonder what we could be mm-hmm. using for payments.
Right.
And it's interesting to me because, you know, I'm a huge fan of Replit. When I was learning to code, yep. you know, 7 years ago, whatever, I used Replit. I thought it was awesome. And I really loved Amjad's original vision for Replit. And the original vision was, you know, a tool to allow anyone to create coding at that time, now creation period, but particularly in a way that lets, basically kids in poor countries. Kids in India, yep. kids in emerging markets make bank.
Yep.
And over time, you know, they've obviously raised a lot of money and now they're focused on the enterprise. I get it. It is what it is. But to me, there's still this massive, massive opportunity for someone to come in here. And this is even something I was posting on Nostr. I would love to fund this if someone's working mm-hmm. on this, incubate this. Yep. If there's a developer who's very talented or, you know, whatever that wants to potentially collaborate on this.
Yeah.
But basically like Replit, but on open protocols focused around, okay, we're going to help you manage all of your secret keys. Maybe, you know, we've already got the libraries necessary to be able to run stuff like, Insect Bunker or mm-hmm. Artur's, you know, Signer in the cloud. We've got payments working out of the box for you using the Lightning Network
right.
and NWC and or Cashew. We can handle all the hosting for you. We just make it easy for you to vibe code Nostr and Bitcoin apps.
Right.
And we handle all the complexity. We can update the latest models, open source or open AI, whatever in the background. I think that would be so incredible because what that company can do that a company like a Replit can't is open payments for anyone.
Right.
And so, you know, and especially if you don't raise a ton of money, then you have a lot more flexibility in how you can grow. Then you can allow, you know, like we talked about this in Nostr News 2 years ago. If there is a company that can unlock the GDP for tens or hundreds of millions of kids in places like India,
yep.
in Bangladesh, in Mexico, in Nigeria, and you can get those kids making $3,000 a month, which is way more than they ever would make in their local economy. And mm-hmm. you take a small cut of that, you've increased the GDP of the internet dramatically.
Yeah.
And because it's all open, people can experiment with whatever they want, micropayments, whatever. And you take a small cut of that. I think it's an incredible opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think we have the beginnings of some of these things. Like, you know, we have a lot of like DeepSeek V3 is a pretty good model, yeah. open source, right? You could run it on Ollama. We have, you know, I haven't used Goose yet, but I'm excited about the concept,
yep.
how it can orchestrate across LLMs and your kind of existing dev toolchain. I'm not sort of working with an existing dev toolchain, so I don't have as much of a use for it, but I keep intending to pull it down and play with it because it does look like an interesting, conceptually, I'm really excited about it. I just haven't dug in. But I almost wonder if, like, we need that platform you're describing right now, or if we can do enough with like rely on, say, Windsurf or Cursor with Cursor rules mm-hmm. to prove that to show people how this can be done very easy, where payments are easy, Nostr integration is easy, et cetera. Secret management, you could probably, you know, probably somebody could help solve that. I mean, Replit solves this well.
Yep.
And if you had a configuration where Replit knew how to do, you know, payment management, that probably kind of gets you all the way there. But I think almost like the most important thing is who's doing what with it.
Yep.
And are people, like, if there's enough demand, I think the tooling is good enough that we now just need to help more people create with the tools that exist. And then as there's more creation, then make the tools better. So
100%. And by the way, that's why I started education first.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To be clear, this is my dream scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, but I think we can prototype with what we've got, which is why we need the guides, the tutorials, the videos, because then you'll see an order of magnitude. Like, so right now, how many people are vibe coding with Noster? It's like you and Carnage. Great. How do we get that from 2 to 20? Awesome. Like, a little bit of education, yeah, will probably get us to 200 even.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Then from that, some of those people will say, well, how do we go from 200 to 2,000? Maybe that'll be education too, but to 20,000, I think then we can start to build our own tooling.
Yeah.
The other thing, and this gets me to the third thing I want, which is, I think, part of this, and I am also sort of in the spirit of, you know, prototyping and seeing if there's demand before we build. The other thing that I loved before Replit focused so much on enterprise, and by the way, I love Replit, and I, you know, I tagged Amjad this. I would love to see them come back to this model. My guess is it's tough with how much money they've raised, but for someone starting from scratch, there's a, you know, an open field.
So, I think it's good still to have Replit with a great business and a very Bitcoin aligned founder.
It's awesome.
Still
and
great.
So I would love to see that. No, I'm a huge fan. Like, I've been doing all my stuff using Replit.
Yep.
But what the thing that they also, I guess, piloted 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, that I loved was bounties. Mm-hmm. And I can't stop thinking about it. I just think that Replit is so close to building the most important company of the decade, if someone can crack this. And with bounties, you know, my other big thesis is, even as vibe coding gets better, there's still going to be certain people that are better than others. Even if it's like really, really simple, there's always going to be people that can think better. There's always going to be better writers because you can structure better, right? And so, you know, how many people can code today? Like 100 million? Probably less than that are
probably
really good.
Probably less, I'd guess.
Yeah. Let's just say order of magnitude, tens of millions, right? Yeah. So with vibe coding, I would expect tens of millions to probably go to at least hundreds of millions, maybe even like a billion people that can build some kind of prototype.
Yep.
I don't expect it to be absolutely everyone. Maybe absolutely everyone can do something, but like, if you want to do something more sophisticated, there'll always be, you know, whatever, some percentage of the population that's better. And so,
I think an important part of that is you won't have everybody necessarily having to start a new like app from scratch. You can take an app that somebody else built and you can customize it for yourself. And now you're like a vibe coder, but you know, you got, you know, you're standing on the 1 yard line or whatever the analogy, right? You're like, sorry, I'm not a sports guy.
Sports. Steve, we're missing you now.
Steve, I just said the 1 yard line. I just did, that's like a sports reference, right?
Yeah.
But you're standing sort of right at the end and all you have to do is, you know, hit the slam dunk.
Right.
From the 1 yard line.
Hit that slam dunk. hit that 3-pointer from the 1 yard line.
But anyway, not to interrupt, but yeah, I think we'll get to a billion, but it might actually even look different. It's not necessarily start with a blank canvas, but start with the canvas of other software that people build.
Well, so here's the beautiful thing. Once you have open micropayments that are permissionless for anyone to build with, right, is I think you can do two things. The first thing you can do is you can say bounties. Like, hey, I get it. I'm not whatever going to build this app, but like, now that there's, you know, 100x more people that can build apps, I would happily pay $50, $100, like whatever the market clearing price is.
And you put
is.
That bounty out, right?
I did this yesterday. So, you know, yesterday I was futzing around Replit trying to get this thing thing to work. I have two ideas that I want to build. And the impetus for this is there's a really cool Reweird the Web hackathon. And I was like, man, there's a giant community in San Francisco that wants to build weird stuff, make the web
wild. Is this
wild
the one happening tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I'm super excited about it. And, you know, in my... perhaps overambition of trying vibe coding for the first time, I was like, oh, this thing is easy. I'll just walk in this hackathon and vibe code the stuff I want. Then I realized, oh shit, this is, we're not there yet. But I'm confident this community of people that wants a long tail to bring back the weird web, to escape from everything being within six company silos, would love Noster, would love open protocols in general, would love Bitcoin payments or Zaps.
Yeah.
But it's still just... it's too hard to show people how to build with it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this thing and I'm going to just show people this thing exists.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I guarantee you, if we can get some like traction going in San Francisco, there will be a lot more people building on Noster.
Yeah.
So that was sort of my naive ambition. I had two ideas for this, two ideas I still like that I thought would be fun for a hackathon like this. One I called Memester, The idea behind Memester is it's a meme template generator. You take the most popular, whatever, your favorite memes, the guy looking back at the girl, you know, Winnie the Pooh, whatever it is you like. And you make it super easy for anyone to grab that, type in their own text and make their own meme. Mm-hmm. Boom. Share that out to Noster relays. Boom. Anyone with Noster that logs in can zap it. Mm-hmm. And then you have a global leaderboard that shows global zaps, your friends' zaps. You could even do some other web of trust stuff if you want to get sophisticated. Very simple idea. Guarantee you this thing will be huge.
Great.
It'll be super fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sitting there trying to build this thing and I'm like, fuck, this is too hard.
Yeah.
Another idea that I have.
Well, so let's take that. Is it too hard? Like what went wrong? How did you talk through what you were trying to do?
I probably just very much lacked the patience. I tried to one-shot it all.
Yeah.
And to play with this for like an hour and then just got frustrated.
Well, because I think this is part of that education step. If we were sitting there looking at this together, I would try to break this problem down. I think it's a good problem. And it feels like a fairly narrow scope, something, but actually I would try to scope it even further down.
Okay.
So like
one meme,
there's no choices, like one text input box. And it doesn't have to necessarily blast it out to all the relays. Or if it does, then you should really watch that video I made for you for your birthday, because that shows you how to do that part of it. But like, where are you going to upload the thing? Are you going to upload it to like a Blossom server or to like Noster.build or somewhere? Like,
great questions. So didn't even think about that.
My point is, you have your big scope thing, and I'm saying let's scope it down. And even when we scope it down, there's still questions.
Totally.
So I would try to like really nail those specifics. Like, here's my Noster.build account, or I have a Primal Legend or whatever. And I don't know if Primal Legend gives you API access. Do you happen to know if that?
That's a good question. Million, if you're listening, do we get API access?
Well, because I thought maybe yes, but I'm not sure if they do.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But basically, like, if you're Primal Legend, that's another storage solution, mm-hmm. right? So if you already have that, you could imagine, you know, making it so that it could work for Primal Legend. That's where it's going to store your meme before it sends it off a link to all, you know, a message link to all of the servers, because the relays are not going to hold the meme data.
Right. And if we could do Blossom, that would be even cooler, but that's maybe more complex.
And I'd say I've not studied Blossom carefully, but my understanding is it's mostly for like censorship resistant stuff. Right. Where it's like, if you think this is going to get taken down, then you put it there.
Depends on how spicy the meme is.
Yeah. But if it's just like, oh, this is funny, I want to show some friends. It's like, it's kind of expensive from a, you know, redundancy perspective.
But Primal or Noster.build could provide that pretty easily.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, but I would just scope it down is my point. Like, take any problem, like this sounds like a narrow scope, scope it further, right?
Well, I don't know if we should, I know we want to talk about other topics today. I was going to say, I'd be down even to try it. I mean, we're not going to be in person together, but to do this together, like live, if we could build that live and people see all the different steps, like I guarantee you 100x Noster.
Well, so here's what we could do. Well, this is tricky for me, I guess.
Yeah.
We can hop on a remote session in screen share.
Yes.
But then I need you to edit it out before, like edit all the keys and stuff. Yeah.
I'm also happy to do it with the keys live, but just do it.
You want to set up all the fake accounts? Whatever?
Yeah, just fake up accounts.
Okay, you can do that if you want, and I'll walk you through how to do it, but make sure you have all the fake accounts.
And I'm also happy we can like edit out all the stuff. It's actually like I've been doing, I'm overdue for a podcast episode, but I was doing some editing yesterday. It's gotten really easy to edit in Riverside.
Riverside's fantastic.
Riverside's just like,
I want Riverside for everything else. Riverside is both records the podcast and has fantastic suite of AI editing tools.
Yeah.
But unless you recorded the podcast with Riverside, you can't use the AI editing tools.
Oh, interesting.
So it's obvious to me that somebody should just build like the AI editing tools of Riverside without having to record it on Riverside. Like, we're just recording it on, you know, OBS and whatever here.
Yes.
We just have, like, the raw files.
And by the way, so going back to the sort of, like, replet for Noster and Lightning idea, you know, so you have the bounties. So I posted 100,000 Satoshi bounty. This is live right now. And I posted it for another app idea, which I can discuss as well. But
so the first one was the meme app.
Yeah, the first one was the meme app. And I'll come back to talk about the second in a second. But the point is, I posted 100,000 Satoshi bounty. There's a couple of people that are working on it right now. And, you know, if it doesn't get built, then I'll know I need to up it a little bit for next time. Yeah. But 100,000 Satoshis or 100,000 Bitcoin, as you and Steve would say, to be clear, 100,000 Satoshis, not 100,000 Bitcoin, what you guys are thinking. Definitely not in that position. But it's a little bit less than $100 in US dollars today. And if I need to up it, double it next time or whatever it is, there's some clearing price to get something decent there. And but a couple people are working on it. And interestingly, I saw one founder who is from India tagged to someone in India. And so that was always my thesis, like $100 for someone in India that's pretty technically relevant.
Yeah.
Probably not bad, especially if it's, if they're good and they know their way around this, maybe it can get done in an hour or two. Anyways, so that's where I kind of see things heading. But to your point about the Riverside being able to like break apart different components. Now imagine, in addition to bounties on that sort of Replit-like platform, you also have a place, sort of like a mini micro app store.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest thing we have to this today is Fran's app, who's building a censorship resistant open app store.
Yeah.
And he and I recorded a pod that's the guy. Fran, if you're listening, I apologize. I'm sitting on it. Hopefully I'll get it out soon. But I really think there's this huge opportunity, and maybe this is even something the REPL platform could bring in, but just to say here, and ranked by web of trust using Nostr, here are all the different components you might want in an app. Hey, you love the Riverside editing tools? Here are the components you can just take straight from that app and plug into the new thing you're building. And so now you have bounties, but you don't just have bounties, right? Because the thing I was trying to get across with my memester idea is whatever, 100,000 Satoshis is not that much money, but it's a good idea.
Yep.
And if someone does this well and they do it commercially and like, you know, they can even bake in like, hey, if you use my site, I get, if you use automatically, you know, 1%, 10% of all the Zap fees through there, you can make real money on this thing. Anyway, so the point is, once you start having Zap splits, once you have the ability to do programmatic split payments, and you have that for the different pieces of software that you're remixing with, and you have a store or some like repository to find all of these things, then, you know, you have the opportunity not only just to get paid to do things with bounties, but you could like, you have repeatable, you know, passive revenue streams if your software or your components get used over and over again.
Yep. It gets used a lot, On the kind of infrastructure platform side, I don't know if you, did you talk to D++ about the stuff she's doing for the hackathon?
A little bit, but mostly just what you've told me.
So she's doing these, you know, a bunch of like Lightning integrated with like an old Nintendo ROM,
right?
Where you can actually like get, you know, you can zap Lightning to get power-ups and stuff and kind of control it. So it's like little controls like that. But I almost feel like there's, I don't know if there's like an open source or commercial thing, but I feel like there's an opportunity to build, do you know like Xbox Live? It's kind of like leaderboards, identities, avatars, discovery, app store stuff. I almost feel like the games ecosystem just has like a bit of a need for something like an app store, but it may be that it's an open source infrastructure thing to help like Nostr become like that kind of glue that connects. It's the same thing that Xbox Live, you know, Steam has a thing.
How would this compare to Steam? Because Steam is it open or
no? No. It's a, you download the client and then they take a tariff, just like just like the I mean, I guess, you know, like 2 weeks ago they called it a tax, but now we can call it a tariff.
Yeah,
but they take a tax. They're basically like an app store model. It's basically very similar to the iOS app store.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, it's for games. They have a games audience. They have payments. They have leaderboards, discovery reviews. All of these kind of like horizontal components that are not the actual game content.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like that kind of thing should exist in like an open web.
Yes.
Right. And it's there's a bunch of like infrastructure-y things to do there. And now, like I was saying, I don't know if this is open source infrastructure or if this is, you know, some private company or maybe many private companies will come around and solve that in different ways.
Yeah.
But that seems like an exciting idea that sort of does bind payments and identities, but with a little bit of like a content thrust behind it.
I love it. You know? And again, and this is something I talk a lot about in the episode with Fran's app, which hopefully I'll drop very soon here on Ideas from the Edge. But, you know, the components of what you need to build this in Nostr are similar for all these different kind of app stores, right? Whether it's components to build an app, whether it's the app itself, the games, whatever it is. You know, you need identity, you need a web of trust. And so Fran and Pip have also built an API, which is like a web of trust API, which allows you to basically sort and rank any component based on whatever, your own algorithms. But it's really cool because then you're like, okay, I'm looking for games, but like the view of the game store I want is only games that DK has zapped.
Right. Yeah.
Or only, you know, DK's follows, the people that he follows has zapped, like second degree. Anyways, I think there's so much potential around this. And I really fundamentally believe as we see an explosion orders of magnitude more apps, more information on the open web in Nostr. Like, open is ultimately going to win. And the people that can help you take the one thing you have that's still scarce, which is your attention, sort through that and find what you actually need and deliver the app you want, the experience you want. Like, there's going to be a lot of value to accrue there.
Yep. I actually think that games in particular are an interesting starting point for a bunch of reasons. I have a active Slack that I'm involved in that's not really open source related at all. And I was talking vibe coding with people, and I was encouraging people to play around. And a lot of people just started building these, I'd call them somewhat like art projects, somewhat like games, but they're not like a utility where they need to like ingest data or log into some server. It's just like, oh, I have an art project idea, right? It almost feels like Burning Man more so than like, you know,
I like that.
SaaS software, right? And that's sort of where people gravitate towards. And they're kind of, you know, their first step into it. Maybe they're not a software developer, a little more noob style. They come in and they build art or games. And I think that that is nice because it's like a very closed system.
Yep.
A game sort of is its own contained narrative. It has it can have a beginning, middle, and end. It can have a structure to it that helps people like fully express without needing to worry about the outside world. It's just like an inner world. And so I feel like this may be part of what really, you know, we think a lot about utilities and communication, information and search and like these very like horizontal technology things. But I actually think games are what draws a lot of people into programming. That's what drew me into programming, you know, 40 years ago. And I think it still brings a lot of people in today. And people always have game ideas, or like you look at Minecraft and the modding ecosystem around there, or like Roblox and all the, you know, custom games that like kids build. So I almost feel like that is an area that I feel like a lot of energy towards. So I'm right now working on a game with the intention of using it as like a substrate to figure out should these leaderboards and stuff be platformized, or what would that look like? And hopefully we can, like, you know, maybe that'll be part of what I do with the hackathon.
Sick.
Yeah.
I'm excited. And it's interesting, actually. So this We Are the Web thing, the hackathon tomorrow, they have three tracks. One of them is like indie games.
Oh, cool.
And again,
what are the other tracks? There's indie games and...
Indie games. I forgot. One of them is like something that's actually useful. And then the other one's like maybe funny or something. I don't know. But the whole point is like weird art projects, like, which is what I want to see. Right. And it just marries so well with Nostr and Lighting. And I so wish someone more competent than me could just go and be like, hey guys, here's so easy. Just use Nostr Wallet Connect and you can integrate Zaps. Like, all of these kids' minds will get blown because they're going to build cool games and they're going to be like, man, I so wish I could just like, you know, whatever, do the thing where, you know, I click the Mario coin and it's real money. Yeah. Or like I just zap and give you a quick, you know.
That's what D++ stuff does, right? You play Mario and you jump and you actually get sats for it.
And if there were a way to, to show these kids like, hey, you can build your weird little game and just integrate payments and integrate identity immediately, like it's going to go by. So I sadly am probably not going to be there tomorrow. We'll see how far I can get with them. But after our hackathon, if we have enough components built that for future hackathons here in San Francisco, I'm confident this is how Nostr and Bitcoin are going to go viral.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so many use cases that people just don't even know this is possible, but they're going to love it because it's open, it's permissionless. If they're making some weird game, they're not trying to build whatever the next, you know, GTA 5 or whatever it is. But they can just quickly accept payments and like, oh my God, that was like so easy. What is this Zap thing?
Yeah.
They're going to lose their minds.
Yeah. I think the best is when people come to it when it solves the next problem they have, you know? So like if they're
like micro,
they're building something and they want to be able to do micropayments, they see somebody else can do micropayments, they want to understand how.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of it is that, like, how do you sort of, you know, how do you encourage people to experiment and notice each other doing something where they run into a wall and they're like, actually, there's a way through that wall and it's Bitcoin.
Totally. And the beautiful thing is maybe we'll have this after the hackathon is just examples, right? And like, I think, you know, how you kind of show it to the world matters, where it's just like, hey, want micropayments? Check this out.
Yeah. The other cool thing that I found in working on this game is that, there's so many great art tools, more so than just, you know, you think about like, oh, you can use OpenAI, you know, O4 or something to generate art. And it's good at, or Midjourney, right? Yeah. It's good at that, but it actually doesn't let you control the art in the way you might want to for a game. Like if you want to, you know, have a sequence of things or a bunch of sprite animations, it's not actually good at any of the controllable stuff. Whereas there's all kinds of tools. Like I ran across, I can't remember the name, maybe Layer AI is one of them. That's actually a whole suite for game asset creation.
Cool.
So, and then you can run it through, I think, Runway ML, which used to be like a downloadable client, but looks like it's now a web, it kind of has a web interface. You can just like upload the sprites, and actually Runway will do the animation of the sprites. So there's a bunch of like tools that I'd call them like, they're a little more pro. Well, they're not like the general LLMs that you use for, you know, for just like vibe coding. It's not just like general coding tools or information retrieval type, you know, prompting. But they're like generative for kind of a professional, but they're not hard to use.
Right.
They're just for like a use case where you actually care about like a consistent art style or like a set of sprites that you want to animate, you know, to make a game. So I was playing with that. And then Suno, you know, the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you could have like a really nice soundtrack.
Yeah. It's cool.
You can customize that. So I think you can actually put together a game that looks and feels like a pro indie game, but like, you know, an indie game, like, typically you could spend a year building an indie game.
Yeah.
You actually build a really good indie game probably in like a few days.
Sounds like Tiki has got a game studio coming.
I know, right? Well, I do. I shared the thing that I had in mind, right?
No. Maybe you did. I
think I shared it, but maybe
you didn't tag me on my birthday. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. you don't listen to me online anymore. Even in our private group chat, you can't be bothered to click the link.
Yeah. Which one was this?
So I don't know if I explained the concept, but I made an app. I was trying to mess around with iOS. I made an app called, I call it Walk Walk right now, but like the concept name is Proof of Walk.
Okay.
I know you're a big walker.
Yeah.
You carry your phone with you when you walk?
Yeah. You're the one that showed me live on Nosser News 2 years ago that you can track steps. I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Apple has the health app that by default has been helping you track your steps for years and years. Most people don't even know that it exists. And then I show it to them. They're like, oh, wow, it knows what I was doing in 2018 or whatever.
Yeah.
They look back and they've got the whole history there. So that's part of this iOS thing called HealthKit, which is kind of like, you know, all of the tools to manage your health, right? Steps is just one of those. So I actually built an app that lets you pull your steps.
Cool.
And I want to build a game where the steps you do in the real world give you kind of energy or power in the virtual world.
I like it.
So it's a little bit...
Oh, that's cool.
And Proof of Walk...
Yeah.
...is like that concept of taking work outside, work in the physical world and turning it into
it's a really good idea.
Virtual world stuff.
Yeah, it's again, I mean, as we've talked about with Bitcoin over and over, it's a creating the portal between dimensions.
Yes.
Between the digital and the physical.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so we can do it with, so I've actually got a prototype. I'll show you when we wrap this. But I've got a prototype, but now I'm like deep in this. I'm like, actually, I've got a lot of ideas. This can go in.
Oh yeah, I want to use this.
Yeah. So we'll be competing to walk more and share with each other. And
we're both big walkers.
We're big walkers. What's your weekly average?
Should we check?
Okay. I don't know. Yesterday I was in the car a lot, so I'm going to excuse myself.
A likely story. Yeah. Let's see. What are you at, DK? Weekly average?
Weekly with today included, the partial day.
Well, how do you do without that?
You just scroll it back. You can scroll it back by a notch.
Okay, yeah. Let's do without today.
Okay, without today. The weekly average?
Yeah.
13,431.
Mm. Looks like I'm about to get zapped some sats, baby. 16,856.
Nice. I like it. 16,856. That's a pretty good weekly.
Yeah.
I'm often around 14, 15. I don't know that I've been... I think I've held 16 or 17 for like a week window, but not...
Yeah, I would say that's not my like... I would say I'm closer to 14, 15 for like a monthly average. I had an outlier day last week.
What happened?
Whenever I hang out with my dad.
Oh, because he likes to walk too.
He's the biggest walker.
Is he the one who got you into walking?
I've always loved walking. I suppose you could say my mom and dad showed me when I was very little.
But, you had to do it.
No, my dad, since moving to San Francisco, back to San Francisco, yeah, he walks more than anyone I know. And, you know, he probably walks 5+ hours a day everywhere. And so he's in the best shape of his life.
Yeah,
even though, yeah, he's older. Like, he's just like, you know, the healthiest, like, most in shape. And interestingly, he didn't know about that. He listens to all of our pods. So shout out to my homie.
Yeah.
To my dad. But he found out about the step tracker on our Nosser News.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
Since then, now he's always showing me his steps.
Yeah. Yeah.
And usually he wins.
Awesome. Well, I can't believe, I mean, I remember back in the day I had a Fitbit, like, when was that? That's 10 or 15 years ago.
Aging yourself now, DK.
Yeah. And they had like this web portal where you could do these like competitions or compare. And then it was just never really well done.
Yeah.
And
too early.
I'm surprised that even like Apple doesn't seem to have it very prominent.
Yeah.
Like, whereas I feel like
people love this.
We're always like sharing it with each other and like comparing it, right?
So. Well, with your app, especially if there's a way for people to compete and potentially win sats or like, there's some sort of like small financial incentive as well.
Yeah.
I've heard people doing this, like you walk steps, you get sats. I don't know what the business model is. Who's paying?
Yeah. Maybe it's just like a marketing expense or something.
Could be. Yeah.
Did I tell you that I worked on games years ago?
I knew you had a game studio.
Now. Yeah.
So it's a new game studio that's coming again.
Well, I don't want to make it bigger than it is, but, but conceptually it thematically plays with similar ideas we played with. Geez, that was, I think it was like 17 years ago.
Wow.
But conceptually it plays with a lot of those same ideas, but it's like updated for the modern era and very like walking based.
Dude, I love it. And you've got a user here. I am not a gamer. So it's always a little challenging for me to get into the gaming stuff because I've never really been a gamer. With the exception of I did like playing GTA when I was in like seventh grade.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you know, not a gamer. However, I am a walker. So if there's a walking based game, I'm in.
All right.
So, and actually, you know what else would be dope while we're on the subject of games? I was talking about this at dinner with Anjali the other night. Something else I think would be like, just make Bitcoin go viral is if you could do Pokemon Go, but just leave sats around.
Mm.
Like a really well done Pokemon Go.
So they would live at various locations?
Yeah. So there's like an Instagram account. I'm not really on Instagram, but Anjali showed this to me. That some guy every day leaves a cash reward around the city, around the Bay Area.
Mm.
And it's a marketing expense for him. He's grown this giant Instagram account.
A cash reward, like USD cash.
Like $20 or $100. Uh-huh. And you never know how big it's going to be.
Okay.
So it's like there's some cash there.
And what is he? He takes a photo of the location?
He takes a video and you have to figure out where it is and go find it.
Oh, I see. Oh, fun.
Super cool. Now imagine you could do that with Satoshis.
Yeah.
So you're going around and you're like, I've left 100,000 Satoshis. Yeah. I left 100,000 Bitcoin right there. Oh my God. What is this? Chinese choppers are coming in. Anyways, but just like imagine like how much fun that would be, or like you could, like a company could just like kind of like Pokemon Go, like, I don't know, like every day, like put out 10 out there. And it's kind of like a treasure hunt.
Right.
And it's cool because it also encourages people to like get in the real world, which I like. So it's like kind of like geocaching.
Yeah. I like that. Is there, how would that work in your mind? Are you imagining that's like a centralized app that custodies those locations, or
even better if it were done over in Austria, like anyone could do it. I mean, like you could potentially have like a live multiplayer game.
So like, are you taking like the geolocation and some sort of like, how do you,
I mean, there's many variations of this. You could like have the geolocation and broadcast that and like have it be more like the geocaching thing, or it could be like kind of like this guy, you don't say, but you take a video and then like people have to like figure it out.
Mm. Yeah. That's cool. I'll have to check. What's the account? You know the name of it?
No, I can find out.
Yeah, we should find the account and maybe we'll link it.
Literally, it's just some guy with a video. And like, it's not that much money considering how many followers he's gotten from it. He puts $20 to $100 a day, but he's gotten whatever, like at least, I don't know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people following.
Oh, wow.
And so it's relative to what people would spend on ads. It's like pretty good ROI. And and people love it.
Yeah.
People love cash.
Yeah, I love the idea of like prizes, you know, Bitcoin prizes for various, you know, activities where it makes it like more fun to try to become, you know, you can always book it as a marketing expense and, you know, probably could build other businesses around it. But
exactly. In fact, this would be a great weekend to do it. I think it's Easter, or Easter's coming up. It'd be like
I think
an
it's
Easter
egg next on. Weekend, right?
Oh, next weekend. Easter egg.
Vibe coded. It'll only take you a few days, right?
Yeah.
Maybe an afternoon.
I'm going to count on you to do that. Or if we do it together. But I think that would be, but I think there's a lot to explore in this like real world gaming idea. So
right.
That's cool.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So that's gaming.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about
a lot of vibe coding, a lot of gaming. But we touched on your open source bounties too, right?
Oh yeah.
Did you go across? You had three ideas total. Did you cover all three of them?
Hmm?
You had three bounty ideas, or didn't you? I thought you had like you were soliciting people to.
Oh, yeah. My other idea. I also just want to say you have a fan here, Diana, is saying in the chat. By the way, we have a live chat, so if people are interested, she said that because I wasn't listening to DK, that I should be thrown out and bring her in. It looks like DK is a fan.
Thank you.
So. But seriously, if you guys want to, we do have a live chat. Where can they act? It's on X or?
Probably. Diana is addressing us from YouTube, and Steve was addressing it from X. So I think probably each of them has their own way.
So if people have experience with vibe coding or reactions to our ideas, like we love reading it live. So let us know. But yes, so my other app idea that I want to see is there's a really cool site. Interestingly, I found this on Stacker News a couple years ago. I think it's called radio.garden or radio.earth. I forget which one. I think radio.garden. And it's like a really cool, like sort of three-dimensional representation of the earth. And it shows like every, I guess, FM radio station. And you can just scroll around and listen. It's like, oh, yeah. Paris. Oh, I want to listen in Rio de Janeiro. Oh, I want to listen in wherever. Like, and it's super cool. Then you can see all these cool radio stations. You can see, well, what's trending in Paris right now? What's trending in, you know, the Middle East? I was listening, St. Petersburg and Moscow actually had a lot of really good radio stations, a lot of good ambient,
oh, wow,
a lot of good chill out. I was very impressed.
Lo-fi beat.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed. And again, in this world of like, you know, the politicians and the tensions and stuff, I would have never even thought to look at Russian radio stations, but I was impressed.
Right.
Anyways, I was thinking to myself, the other app I would love to see is basically someone just literally clone that, but let me log in with Noster, see what my friends are listening to, zap the radio stations, and zap my friends for sharing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. So?
And a leaderboard.
Yeah.
A leaderboard that shows, what's DK listening to? What are my follows? What are my second degrees listening to? Cool. Can I zap the radio station? Can I zap DK for sharing?
Right, right.
Or could you even have a split? That gets more.
So, but that's part of your bounty. You have a bounty out for that one?
Yes. Yeah, so I put out 2 100,000 Satoshi / Bitcoin bounties. And I said I would, if people can build either of these before Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific, I'll pay 100,000 sats each.
And the Saturday 9 a.m. Pacific was so you can bring it to the,
yeah,
the hackathon?
Yeah, I'm not even really trying to necessarily participate in the hackathon because the hackathon is during Saturday. I'm sure I'm violating the rules or whatever. My sole goal in this is like, I love that people want to make the web weird again.
Yeah.
I think Noster and Bitcoin are incredible tools for that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a shame and a crime that all these like really great hackers in San Francisco just have no idea this exists. So my sole goal is just to be like a diplomat and be like, guys, you can integrate open commons identity. And like, this just seems like such fertile ground because these are people that they're not trying to build, you know, $1 trillion businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
We capture all the value. No, it's like, they just want to make the web cool again. And like, I think that's what Noster and Bitcoin can do.
Yeah, totally. I'm down for it. Well, I'm going to be out of town. I told you I'm flying, but I'm going to be vibe coding while I fly this afternoon.
Amazing.
And then I'll be back. I'll be back here by next Friday.
Amazing.
So hopefully I get
for
to
the
hear.
Next hackathon.
Oh, are you? No, you're going to, that's on Saturday. So you'll be.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. So you'll be back to talk about it next week.
Yeah. Well, unclear if I'll be in live or not, but
okay.
I will be able to talk about it.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyways, so those are the ideas. And by the way, and just to be clear, so there's never any confusion, I said I will give out a total of 200,000 sats. So, or Bitcoin.
200,000 Bitcoin.
Basically just choosing at my own discretion. So just to be clear, like if 10 people do this, I'm not going to give out like a, you know, infinite amount of Bitcoin, just to be clear. But cool.
And you see Diana saying, I definitely had an idea I archived for a moment after Nostriga that was about gamifying a particular type of incentive. So now I know who to reach out to when I'm ready to explore that.
David King.
You should definitely go and plant the seeds for Noster. So yeah, like most, Noster definitely has that weird vibe.
Yeah.
I think that's, that was one of my big takeaways from Nostrica, was just that it had this, it was this weird energy that I didn't feel like I'd run into since like almost like the 80s or 90s.
Exactly.
You know, it felt like the really like kind of pre-internet, pre-browser internet.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's why, you know, for me, in addition to the Bitcoin and Lightning payments, which is cool, that's why I love Nostrs. Like I just, yeah. I want to make the web weird again. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, a web ruled by Facebook and
yeah,
X,
you need it to
it
flourish.
Just sucks. Like open. Yeah. Open is the only way to have a cool, and you know, this is why I'm also, I've talked about this, you know, we've mentioned this a couple of times, I'm a big fan of Coggy.
Yeah.
Coggy is sort of the indie search engine a lot of Hacker News people use. Again, these guys are kind of like the, you know, the trendsetters or tastemakers, I would say, the Anons as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have really cool modes where you can do things like there's the indie web or the small web, and they have special indexes just to see like, I just want to pull up long tails of blogs. I think another great sort of idea for Noster app is just like, kind of like, I want to see like a random scrolling, like a random chat roulette. You actually could do chat roulette with like, and it would actually work this time because you could use reputation. So you're not just going to get someone like,
right.
You know, flashing you. But like for ideas, like, hey, I just want like every day or just like real time, just like show me a random cool, weird blog. And you can use Web of Trust to see like what your friends think is cool, what they're zapping.
Yeah.
There's so much cool stuff we can build with Noster. We just need to get past this. It's just social media. It's not just social media. Like we have identity, we have a data commons. Like let's make it weird and awesome.
And can you tell me a bit about the new project? I think it's newish that Will is doing.
Yeah.
I think NoteDeck is something of a evolved open browser platform. Do you know much about what that is?
I don't know a ton. And if Will or someone, I know LSAT's working with him on there, is listening to this, I would love to get more explanation. Will basically commented on my post about vibe coding being the catalyst for Nostr adoption. His basically point was what he's trying to build Node.dec kind of, I think, is somewhat like a browser, and that has a lot of the components you need to use Nostr, like key management, I guess relay selection, just kind of already handled for you. So something like a browser. But then I asked him where to get started. He shared the GitHub, and I haven't done anything with it since. So
is that maybe the thing when you were talking about, like, somebody to take the Replit ideas and make
maybe that's it.
Kind of full stack, more simple to use. Is Node.dec possibly that, or?
It could be. I mean, my guess is maybe the components from Node.dec could be used in this like building platform as well. And my understanding is what he's trying to do with Node.dec is more of a consumption experience, at least for now. So it's more like a web browser. But all the components he built for that web browser, maybe those are the same components. You could be like, hey, just use the Node.dec libraries as I'm vibe coding to handle all the other stuff.
But what does it mean to be a web browser? Is it like a Nostr, like a social media browser thing is a form of Nostr browsing of the web? What's the main way to think about the difference of what this is?
To me, and again, I could be totally wrong here, so I'd love to, you know, to get a better explanation, but imagine if I had a browser, but the browser just had my private key stored and was only set to browse NPub or Nostr notes. And
isn't that literally what Domus is, though? Like, this is something different, right?
Yeah, but that's a great question. I guess I don't fully understand the difference.
I thought this was something more of like an application infrastructure, like kind of like your Replit idea. I thought it was something to do with, like, you could build a new type of content, a new type of display, and it does all your key management.
Well, I think, to be clear, Domus is very, and all of the current popular clients like Primal are very geared towards like the social media short note form. I know Primal does have long form there as well. My guess is that this would be more flexible. So it's not just like the short tweet type notes. He did mention that this is like infrastructure you could use to vibe code with, but I think there's still like a consumption experience he's focused on.
Oh, okay.
But I would love to be correct. If LSAT or Will or someone from Nostr could explain it like we're five, we'd love to understand.
Because I was under the impression that like reading notes and stuff, those use cases, like long form, short form, but that's kind of like a thing, and those are like effectively what we're calling social media clients. And I thought that this other thing was about maybe consuming or using or launching apps.
Could be.
If that's the case, then it kind of fits with the vibe coding idea.
Yeah, and to be clear, you know, there's still some components. Like, I don't think Domus has like a built-in wallet. I think this would have a built-in wallet. Although I guess you via Nostr Wallet Connect, you could bring your own. But it's a great question. I'd love to understand what it actually is doing. So
yeah. Speaking of wallets, Phoenix rises from the ashes.
Great segue to make sure we cover the topics that we threw out there. And I know this has been a very Nostr heavy one, so we have a little Bitcoin discussion for you now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happened?
So this actually, I don't have a ton to say about Phoenix, but I do think it sparks an interesting discussion about, you know, thinking about where companies spend their resources building non-custodial or custodial solutions. Mm-hmm. So to give a bit of context, a little over a year ago, there was obviously in a different administration, a lot of, I guess, fear from companies that they were going to get labeled as money transmitters if they offered custodial Lightning solutions. And Phoenix, despite being non-custodial, depending on how you look at it, they, I believe, like source their own channels for you from their own Lightning service provider. Basically, under some interpretation, people might still see them as a money transmitter. And so they basically completely pulled out of the United States. And they're not the only ones. A lot of different companies
just
shut down.
Out of like caution.
Out of full caution. Yeah. You had companies like Albi, you know, discontinued their custodial offering and went fully non-custodial, which is a great offering, Albi Hub, but it's a paid offering.
Mm-hmm.
You had obviously Stacker News, which we'll come back to in a minute. You know, Kia made the decision to go fully to discontinue their custodial wallet services and to either offer Cowboy credits, which are exchangeable for Bitcoin, or allow you to connect your own wallet via Nostr Wallet Connect. So something like Albi Hub. Anyways, but the gist of it is, obviously that's really, you know, it hurts growth. It just made it a lot harder for like the noob to be able to quickly get a Lightning wallet. And now with the new administration that seems like they're making it a lot clearer, they're not going to go after, crypto companies, Lightning service providers or whatever. And they're going to be a lot more, I guess, relaxed on, mixers and all kinds of Bitcoin and crypto related services, Phoenix has made the decision to come back to the United States. And
it was a specific piece of policy or some declaration, right?
I don't know if it was a specific piece of policy. I think there was a declaration where they said they're not going to, you know, prosecute various crypto companies, mixers. I don't know if that was like a formal thing or if it was just an announcement.
But is that the thing that instigated the return?
I think so. I think in general, there's what I would call a larger vibe shift, which is like the current administration is not going to be hunting you down like the last administration might have, mm-hmm. if you're like at all in a gray area. And anyway, so Phoenix, which is a French, you know, company, is now back in the United States. And this sparked a very interesting discussion. So not just about Phoenix specifically, but on Stacker News, where there is, you know, 60 or 70 comment thread, where Siggy, who is one of the most active posters there, basically asked, like, is Stacker News not going to bring back the custodial wallet? And it was a really interesting thread because there were people basically discussing, like, on the one hand, there's no question that, you know, it would be less confusing just to have Satoshis and not cowboy credits and this other thing. And, you know, for a normal user, like, custodial is easier. It just is. Like, you know, I've seen the growth numbers for a lot of these companies. Like, when there was custodial offering, we're talking 10 to 100x more adoption. It is what it is. But to be fair, you know, the non-custodial options have gotten a lot better. And Kian and EK have spent a lot of time making the platform much easier to use for non-custodial mm-hmm. experience. They've integrated Nostr Wallet Connect. And now there are sort of custodial wallets that are also using Nostr Wallet Connect, which makes it a lot easier to connect to Stacker News. Primal would be one prime example of that. Mm-hmm. And anyways, so but it was just very interesting to see back and forth. I don't even think Kian commented on the thread. EK did multiple times though and said EK works with Kube, that they're not going to bring back the custodial offering. And it was just interesting to see people debate. Some people were very much in favor of like, hey, the site's going to grow a lot more if you bring back custodial, you know, you're kind of, you've got the clear. But a lot of other people, including EK, were like, look, you know, the future, you know, administrations come and go.
Yeah.
The future, if the future we actually want to build is this sort of decentralized hive mind, which interestingly is the name of my fund. If we really want that to flourish, like we want to double down and just make the tools so good that it can be equivalent, ease of use for a noob coming to the site. And, you know, I respect that decision. I mean, I think it is a valid debate. I think there are valid trade-offs, but, you know, political whims come and go. And I think building for that other future is, it's admirable. Although, you know, it certainly has trade-offs in terms of short-term growth, I would imagine.
Have you talked to Kian? Because I think about, I mean, he's been working on Stacker News for many, many years.
Yeah.
And
it's my favorite site on the web, by the way. I love that site.
Yeah, it's great. But there weren't really good tools. Like the tooling ecosystem has evolved as the site has evolved.
Right.
And I wonder, like, if he were to start from scratch today, would there be good third-party tools, hopefully open source, that he could just use, plug in, and kind of almost like not worry about Lightning and worry more about the app, the community, stuff like that. And then if he needs custodial, he flips that switch. And if he needs non-custodial, he flips that switch. But he's sort of like not really involved in the infrastructure as much as he's focused on like the application layer.
Well, I think that's where he's tried to get to by like really focusing on Nostr Wallet Connect. When he started, like to your point, like he kind of had to do the custody because everything was so jank back then. But it's a good question. And I think, you know, without naming names, because I don't know if they're trying to be public yet, but we've been talking to a company here in Presidio Bitcoin that thinks they figure out how to do custodial that just like spins up and it's free and easy and just works.
Non-custodial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lexi.
Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. They're live, Lexi. And if that actually ends up working, you know, and we'll see because they're going to be part of the hackathon. So people can use their SDK. Albi Hub continues to get a lot better as well with their SDKs. My guess is, you know, some of those tooling might make his life easier. But I also know Kube is the constant artisan and probably just like wants to make it, you know, his way as well. But I don't know, maybe he's listening to this and has some comments.
Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, there's one Kube, you're not going to get, you know, a second of those, but there's probably thousands of people who would aspire to build something and they'd want to either use the Stacker News infrastructure, like the payment infrastructure, or, you know, find somebody else who provides similar payment infrastructure so that they could build their own thing. Because like, you know, Kube is both building the infrastructure and the application.
Yeah.
And, you know, super talented dude and like great team. But it'd be, I think, almost like more appropriate for an application layer company to focus just on that if there was a really good infrastructure layer. And I don't know if that exists yet or not, but it feels like that would be a big unlock. And maybe Lexi, I mean, I've been I've been suggesting to Max that we wrap it in a SDK so that we can use it for the hackathon. And he said he doesn't mind me mentioning it out loud. So
as of yesterday, he said it's gonna work. So we'll see.
It is. Yeah. Oh, good. So we'll be able to use that as a solution for the hackathon.
That's what he says. It's not built yet, so it remains to be seen. But that seems to be their plan.
Good. Yeah, because I want to receive Lightning payments and create Lexi wallets or create non-custodial Lightning wallets for any users of any app that I work on.
I would love that. Yeah. And for people, I would say the best out there in the market right now, SDK is definitely the Albi Hub, but that you have to pay. And so for a lot of people, that's just a non-starter.
Like the Albi Hub though would be for the developer of the thing to run the hub. But if you wanted to, issue,
you can outsource that to Albi.
Yeah, but you outsource that to Albi as a developer. But let's say I develop an app, and then I want 1,000 people who use the app to all have their own non-custodial Lightning.
Right.
Would you have to pay Albi for each of those?
And that's the issue right now, is unless they figure out a way to do it where you can just spin those up for free. And I don't think anyone has figured that out yet, except for possibly Lexi. And so we'll see how that works.
Right. I think that's an important infrastructure layer.
Super important piece, yeah.
Cool. So Phoenix is back. We got Phoenix back. Yep. What else? We talked Note Deck. We talked, I don't know. What else? Top of mind.
Any comments,
your
questions?
Your one Zeta hash?
Huh?
Do you want to talk about your...
Yeah, I think this is important to mention. We'll probably, Steve, when you're back, we'll go a little deeper because I know Steve really cares a lot about mining. But right after we logged off last week, I was really excited to see that for at least, I could be wrong, but the first time I've ever seen it, Bitcoin touched one Zeta hash. And that's the hash rate. So that's the amount of total computation securing the network. That's a big deal. It's a big deal to me because the thing I really track when I'm looking at the health of Bitcoin price, whatever comes and goes, maybe there's a lag behind gold and this and that. But what really matters to me is the network secure? And what's the energy cost of Bitcoin? So the two metrics I'm always tracking are just total hash rate and Capriol Investments has a really nice chart where they explain the energy cost. Like just what is the production cost, the cost to produce one Bitcoin purely priced in joules? What does that cost? That's a number I track very closely. And for the first time I'd ever seen it, we touched one Zeta hash. Before that, it was, around 700 exahash. That's what I've noticed in the last couple of weeks. Steve made the great point in our comments. I was quite excited. He was like, well, that's just one day. And, you got to look at the moving weekly average because it did go down immediately after. But the moving weekly average, even today, I think, jumped from around 700 to in the 800. So it's definitely trending upward. I think that's...
Do we know why that... Is it somebody comes online and they drop a lot of hash rate and then they go offline because they find it wasn't profitable or...
It's a great question. Why would someone just come on for a minute versus not? So I don't know. The naive or simple answer is yes, it was profitable and then it wasn't profitable. And so maybe there's situations where, as an example, one of the companies I work with, Satoshi Energy, they help data centers stranded wind assets monetize that additional electricity, which would otherwise just be grounded with Bitcoin miners, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a world where, maybe you have some weird situation where the grid is over flooded, it's a particularly sunny day, there's a lot more storage, and so we can just draw from that. And so maybe I have a little bit of extra electricity I wasn't expecting and I need to do something with it. Boom, I can use the old depreciated miners and that could be a spike. It could just be that you have a lot of public companies or whatever that, maybe they have, their miners that they have are not profitable most of the time, but they still have them hooked up just in case there's periods.
Just old hardware sitting around.
Yeah. I mean, that's one possibility. What I think is a more interesting possibility or story though, and this wouldn't explain the spike and then drop back down, is.
And it went up to one Zeta hash. Did it go back to 700 exahash?
I think right now, let's see. It went, the moving weekly average was around 800. So let's see. I just usually go to mempool. We'll find out what it is. But what's more interesting to me is the possibility of basically, could this be just nation states? Whenever
that are mining, you're saying?
That's right. And whenever you see adoption going up that much. So right now, the current moving 1 week average is 879.9, so 880 exahash. So we're definitely trending upwards.
Mm-hmm.
Not the one Zeta hash.
That's how many day?
It says it's a 1 week average.
1 week.
Yeah, 1 week moving average. So if you really looked at just the current moment by moment, yeah, we're similar, around 870 exahash. That's April 10th. That's yesterday. I don't see the 11th on here yet. But anyways, but it's interesting to me because, you know, regardless, we're talking about a move up in the like 10, 20, 30% range, which is not trivial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as the world becomes increasingly uncertain and people are increasingly, you know, less trusting of the dollar and the yuan and whatever, where are they going to turn? And if I'm a nation state, you know, if I start buying Bitcoin very heavily on the books, like obviously that's going to make the price pump. Obviously that's going to like trigger all kinds of speculation. People are going to look at me. If I mine, then potentially I could do that a lot more privately. And potentially I could monetize energy resources, which I might own, which are completely going unused. And I definitely expect to see hash rate continue to grow as governments continue to embrace this. And, you know, if you're a country that has hydropower that's completely unused, personally, I think, you know, as we'll talk about on the Earth Day episode, solar is where it's at.
Right.
And that's continually going to eat the lion's share. But that's a sort of a longer term play. And in the short term, if I have any unmonetized energy asset and I can make more money mining Bitcoin and I want to start stacking and I don't want to show the world I'm stacking, seems like a good way to do it.
But I mean, can you, what can you really stack? You're stacking 3 Bitcoin per 10 minutes if you're winning them all?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Can you get to nation state level?
Well, you think about it, you've got 3 every 10 minutes. And let's see.
I'm just thinking out loud because it feels to me like when I hear nation state numbers, they're often talking about thousands of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
On the smaller side.
Let's see. Huh? Well, so it's a little bit more because you still have the fees, although the fee markets have been down. Let's see. A bit more. But let's say, okay, so you've got 450 Bitcoins issued a day. You know, if you have 10% of the hash rate, let's say you put a lot on, so you're getting like 45 Bitcoin a day, 45 times roughly $100,000. To make the math easy, you're talking about $4.5 million. Like it's not nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you start stacking that slowly over time. Privately without a lot of people knowing. I think the other key element is this is a great option for countries that have unmonetized energy resources.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, it's just speculation on my part. I have no idea, but.
Cool. Also speculation is this Bitcoin.
Yeah. Steve, I have a comment. Measuring hash rate is statistical, not precise. We'll probably talk more about that next week.
We should talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I talked again about the UTX Oracle, which is another statistical thing.
Yeah. But what I would just say on that is, we'll go deeper, but like it's trending upwards. That's the interesting thing to me.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We've got a few minutes. Do you want to mention a little bit about Bitcoin securitization? There was this new.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That's a great point. I forgot to mention. So Bitcoin securitization, from the very first episode that we did with Steve Live, we were talking about MicroStrategy and what exactly is MicroStrategy doing? Mm-hmm. Like, how are they? And what I've come to realize over time with MicroStrategy is, you know, a lot of people were debating like, oh, they're trading at a premium to their NAV, to their net asset value. Like, what are they doing? It's like, well, no. What MicroStrategy is doing is Michael Saylor calls them a refining company. And at first I was like, the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
But now I get it. I think he's absolutely right. He basically is buying Bitcoin, finding giant pools of capital in the market that have various mandates or restrictions on what they can buy. There's people at those funds that want access to some part of Bitcoin's returns and or volatility stack. He's essentially taking that volatility, repackaging it, tranching it, and giving it to those big markets. And to be clear, those markets are like, we're talking the bond market, you know, whatever, a third of all global wealth, funds that can only buy public equities. That's a mm-hmm. huge chunk of the total global wealth as well. And what's crazy to me is, you know, we talked about this on the show that I think all of us are very much in the camp of, we want to make Bitcoin quote unquote useful. We want to see it used on the internet. That's why we talk about the AI stuff. That's why we talk mm-hmm. about Nostr. But if I just put on, and I love that, and of course, and that's where I focus a ton of my time and energy. But if I just put on my investor hat and I say, what is the market saying? What is the market screaming at me? The market is screaming. MicroStrategy is like, I think has the best performance of any public company in the last year, even over NVIDIA. It's screaming
mm-hmm.
the you know, capital markets want to be able to access Bitcoin. They want to be right. able to access Bitcoin volatility in a way that they're able to access it.
Right.
Like there is no question. The fact that MicroStrategy is doing this well, it is the market screaming. You can like it, you can hate it. It is a fact. As yep. an investor, you sometimes just have to listen to reality. I mean, you should always listen to reality. Yeah. You know, he or she who hears reality best often, you know, should in theory win. But what's interesting to me is like, okay, so MicroStrategy is doing this. And you've seen some tiny plays, you know, Metaplanet's a small company in Japan, similar scientific mm-hmm. research to this. But I'm sitting here looking, I'm like, what is going on? Saylor is giving a masterclass in financial engineering and securitization, and no one else is doing this? And we talked about, well, you know, he's in this unique company, this unique position because he controls the public company, you know, like he has all the voting rights as the founder. And, you know, it's a public company, so we can access different kinds of capital markets. And it's a weird situation. It's like, okay, that's fair for a while. But it's like, if I'm sitting there watching you just like sit there and just print money,
yeah,
at some point you're like, well, is anyone else going to like compete with this dude? Is anyone else going to say like, this is the playbook, it's working, the market is screaming at once, securitize Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Where is the competition or where are the people? And finally, last week, I was very excited to see this because it's someone that we've talked about, praised before on the show, someone I follow closely since 2018, I think is just one of the best thinkers in the space, which is Pierre Richard. And Pierre announced the Bitcoin Bond Company, which is a new private company at this point, although I wouldn't be surprised to see them go public quickly, which is essentially doing that. They're going to, you know, essentially buy Bitcoin, securitize it, and sell it to different market actors with in different tranches with different risk profiles and different mandates. And, you know, one of the quick criticisms you hear this is, you know, your sounds like, wait a second, the last time I heard about CDOs and collateralized debt obligations, didn't that end pretty badly? I'm pretty sure I saw the Michael Lewis, you know, The Big Short. And that's a fair point. And like, you know, obviously I don't have a crystal ball. Maybe this all blows up too.
Well, I think that was sort of like an exploit on like repackaging these things where you weren't being truthful or above board about the risk that actually was in the package you were handing and selling off.
The underlying was not yeah. the risk that you claimed it was.
Yeah. You're saying, oh, this is AAA, but it's actually garbage, right?
Exactly.
And I think in the case of Bitcoin, that doesn't seem like the kind of exploit, but if something were to go wrong, what would it? It would be like you didn't get good terms on the debt, so you could blow up or get liquidated if there were a price drop. What how would it go wrong in this case?
Well, I mean, your custodian gets hacked. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, you know, we have really good security on the Bitcoin and then Coinbase gets hacked or whatever. You know, I guess there's both the threats to Bitcoin itself. So maybe people are not pricing the quantum stuff correctly. There's the threats to the custodianship. And then maybe there's like actually, you know, the actual terms of the contract that they're selling itself. Maybe there's something in there that isn't reflected. But in general, I mean, to be clear, I'm certainly no expert on this. Like I'm not, you know, whatever, a Wall Street guy. But in general, what I would say is the market wants this. It's screaming it wants this. The underlying asset is not, at least if we're all right, toxic. Like the key arbitrage opportunity is the secret in the world is knowing that Bitcoin is less risky than most people think.
Right.
And if that's true, then this to me is just kind of a no-brainer. And I'm like, duh, this is going to work. Like, let's see tons of other companies.
And does each actor exploit like a different arb in the market? Like there's like maybe a capital pool over here that has a mandate. They can only invest in thing X. Mm-hmm. And so somebody shows up with thing X, but they end up vacuuming up all the capital that has that specific mandate. And then a new entity gets launched and it has to go after capital that has a mandate for thing Y.
Yeah. And to be roughly, clear, well, I think there's different ways you could do this. Like I don't know and or, you know, want to go too deep into what Pierre is thinking, but there's obviously opportunities to have like one company public, like MicroStrategy. There's opportunity to do individual SPVs for different kinds of entities. And, you know, maybe some of those need to be public companies, maybe some don't, depending on the kind of pools of capital you're accessing. But I think like the general thesis without being an expert on the specific pools is there's lots of money with mandates and or people that like have different understanding of Bitcoin. So for example, there's a pool of capital that thinks Bitcoin's not going to zero. I'm pretty sure it's going to be around. Do I think the entire monetary system is going to move over there and in the future, everything is built on top of Bitcoin? That sounds pretty crazy. But I'm willing to have an instrument that assumes Bitcoin doesn't go to zero. And so anyways, the point being, I think you can structure the risk based on where people are at.
To help people express a bunch of different beliefs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, I know there's like a lot of mixed feelings on this because it's like, you know, is this really helping with Satoshi's vision of peer-to-peer e-cash? I think one controversial thing Pierre did put in his letter is he said Satoshi's vision for peer-to-peer cash is achieved. And that's one thing I would disagree with. I don't think we're there yet. I think it's a great first step. But clearly until like, until more people than just like, you know, whatever, a few people going to pub key or paying with Bitcoin, I think we've got a ways to go.
I think it's the foundation, though.
It's the foundation, yes.
Right? Like, you couldn't really invent a peer-to-peer e-cash without this foundation, but maybe Satoshi thought we were there already, and, like, maybe we're just all collectively realizing it's just a long process. And the first thing you have to do is get the core, like, what is money, and get money right.
Yes.
And that's more a store of value than medium of exchange and payments. But that this is actually the right way. And it's just like unfolding over the course of maybe decades.
And I agree with that. And so my view on all of this is like, it's don't fight gravity. There are things that are inevitable. I think it's awesome that we're all pushing for people to use Bitcoin, hopefully for online services, mm-hmm. AIs. But at the same time, it's like everything, you know, it's kind of like, as we've talked about with Kevin Kelly, there are things that are inevitable, right? Like you need building blocks to bring together to form the next building blocks,
yeah.
Like cells to build molecules,
yeah.
All the way up and all the way down. And I feel like while we continue to push on adoption, which is great, and I'm all for it and have personally done a lot on that front, the market is screaming it wants securitized Bitcoin. So like, why fight it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the whole vision of Bitcoin is to let people do what they want with
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So some people want to do that. Like, it might not be.
And it's not just some people. We're talking like a lot of capital.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the way a lot of people get their first exposure or touch point with it. So I don't love it. I don't choose it for myself in most of the time. But I think it serves a purpose, and it, you know, effectively it's kind of a marketing purpose.
Marketing purpose. And also I do think that, you know, one thing maybe people should be a little bit more, cognizant and open-minded on is like, it still can help a lot of people in this front. So in the case of like a pension fund, you know, I really believe it's important pension funds buy Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't, I don't know how they're going to pay the pensions of the people that are part of the pension,
yep.
Whatever, the pensioners. But if they do buy Bitcoin, then like those pensioners probably are in a pretty good, they're in a much better position than they would be if the pension fund did not buy Bitcoin.
Yep, yep.
So anything else or on that note?
Steve, any last minute comments?
Or anyone else in the chat?
Steve's hanging out.
God of vibes.
Throwing fruit at us.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man, no tomatoes. Cool.
All right.
Well, this was fun.
This was fun, yeah.
Yeah.
Next time with Steve.
Till next week.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.